welcome to Rhythm and Brews. We're doing an episode today that I've wanted to do since I first came up with the idea for the show, which is Guilty Pleasures. And I've got two of my favorite guests on the show with me today. I've got Kat.
Hey.
And I've got Raffi.
What's up?
We talked about this before we got on mic that we're going to do this a little bit differently. Usually when we get to our playlists, we kind of just take turns one at a time going song by song. But today, we're actually going to put our playlists on random. And when your song comes up, you just have to be ready to explain it and defend it. So we'll get to that in a few minutes. We'll start with BYOB like we always do. But before we do that, I just want to talk a little bit about how we put our playlist together. I'll start just by explaining this, because I've mentioned on the show before that I'm a pop boy. I like pop music a lot, and I'm not embarrassed or ashamed of it. So I didn't put things on here that a lot of people might consider guilty pleasures, like Carly Rae Jepsen or pop punk or those types of things. I put songs on my list that I'm legitimately embarrassed to listen to. And the way I was describing it to Kat, like, if somebody walked in, I was listening to headphones, they accidentally pulled the jack out of the stereo, and now that music is just blasting, am I embarrassed? That's, if the answer is yes, that's a guilty pleasure for me. So that's how I put my list together. How about you guys, Kat? How'd you put yours together?
So for me, some of my artists aren't necessarily embarrassing. It's more like the song choice from them, or like the point in their career, or maybe the genre in general. So yeah, okay. There's a mixture of choices.
How about you, Raffi?
Yeah, so I think mine's a little different. So like you, I think there's certain things that certainly embarrass me, or have embarrassed me in the past. But like I was telling you guys before, like I'm not really ashamed of much of my music anymore. It's just really the settings in which I listen to them may not be like professional or something like that, right? So like to harp on what you were talking about, Tim, like, going into, like, leaving my desk and going into a conference room or like where I'm presenting or something, I'm terrified of like plugging in and like having not pressed pause on my music and that like happening, right? So it's I think in terms of how I picked my music, though, it was really story based. So like there's some scenario that occurred where I was just like embarrassed because this particular song or this music was involved or whatever. Yeah. So that's kind of how I'm attacking mine.
All right. Well, let's get into our BYOBs. Kat, what are you drinking today and why?
So I brought with me the Firestone Walker Brewing Company's Rosalie, which is a rosé beer. I am a 30-something woman, so of course I love rosé, it just feels like such like a basic choice for me, so I always feel a little embarrassed when I'm at restaurants being like, can I have a glass of the rosé? But I love it, so I figured a rosé beer would fit well with a guilty pleasure.
I love that. Raffi, how about you?
So I'm going with Twisted Tea because, you know, well, first of all, again, in the summers when I'm drinking this thing, I don't care. Like, whatever. If you call me lame for it, that's fine. It's the perfect summer drink. But let's call it as it is. It's not like the most manly of beers or anything like that. It's not even really like a classic beer. So that's what I'm going with.
What is it actually? Is it just like a Long Island iced tea pre-mixed or something?
No. So it is like a malt beverage. So I think it still classifies as something in that family. But yeah, it's like tea based, definitely in the beer fridge. So.
All right. I am doing Corbinian by Weinstephaner today. It is a Doppelbock. And the reason I picked it is Doppelbocks are basically like milkshake beers to me. They're just like so thick and rich and delicious, but like super high in calorie and very bad for you. So it's definitely one of my guilty pleasures. Let's take a drink and then we'll get into these playlists. Are you guys like... You're ready to defend your guilty pleasures?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see.
Let's do this.
I'm really curious who's going to come up first.
This is weird. This beer.
Oh, you've never had it before?
I've never had it before.
What's it taste like?
It's brewed with hibiscus and wine grapes, so it tastes like wine, but it wasn't what I was expecting. It tastes like for some reason.
I just let Raffy have some of the Corbinian.
Really good. That's actually really good.
It's very. It's a milkshake. It's like a chocolate sure, milkshake beer.
Milkshake that gets you hammered.
All right, here we go.
All right, sweet. So we're starting with
easing into this. Then.
Okay, so the song that we have here is Samwise the Brave, off the Two Tower soundtrack. So first and foremost, like when I'm at work, soundtracks are my jam.
Yeah.
Like it, especially if like things are like super stressful or like I'm trying to hit some sort of, you know, deadline or something like that. Like an epic soundtrack gets me pumped up, and like I just like put on headphones, I block everything else out, and I'm like there, right? So so the story here is at my last job, so I managed a group of people there, and we had this like hard implementation of a new software. And it was just very tough. It was like a very, very difficult month and a half for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was like working late nights, weekends, like all this stuff to try to get back to like where we were prior to this launch. And so I remember one day I was like, we were all so burnt out. We were just like, just not feeling it at all. Like, you know, really tough. And I remember like watching this scene where this song is playing in Two Towers, which I'm not sure if you guys made the connection, but it's like when it's at the end of Two Towers when Frodo is like, he's just like lost all hope. He's like done. And Sam kind of like comes out of like the out of the blue and gives this like really heartfelt speech. And this like emotional speech that just like it's like so touching, right? So
it's like exactly what he needs in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember, you know, we're at work and I bring all my the managers that work for me, I bring them all into my office and I'm like, guys, like we're gonna watch this scene that just like really, really like gets to me, right? Like it's a very like inspiring scene. So I pop it on, we're like watching it, the song's playing, and like, you know, we get to the end of it and I'm like, you know, I'm like all pumped. I'm all like, oh man, that's exactly what I need. And mm-hmm. I just like turn around and I look at these other guys and they're just like, what the fuck just happened? Like, why is she playing this random YouTube video for us? And like, you know, you could tell it just had nothing
to land.
Because like, who listens to epic music like soundtrack wise? And
I love the idea that soundtrack, like that this is your get shit done music at work.
Well, so, I mean, to defend myself, it's like the whole album, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this one in particular is, you know, definitely tugs at the...
It's very uplifting.
Yeah, right.
I listened to a lot of scores when I was studying over the summer, and I did my, like, Spotify top artist of the year, and mine was John Williams.
But John Williams only makes bangers.
True.
It's very true, yeah.
But I get where you're coming from. Like, sometimes it just, like, helps you zero in on that spot and, like, center you.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Nice atmosphere.
And to your point, though, it's, like, the worst. The other end of the pendulum there, it's like if you're in like a chill mood and you're mm-hmm. like at home or like, you know, you're hanging out at a pool or something like that and just like listening to music, it's the worst when you do your like my playlist thing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden like something from a soundtrack comes on, you're like, what am I supposed to do with this right now?
Yeah. Former guest BWK always talks about how when he'll like plug his phone into his like speaker in his car and his voice memos will just start playing.
Oh, this is me. So this is Jonas Brothers. The song is Love Bug. So the song itself is kind of a banger, I think. It's really catchy.
You're a big Joe Bros defender.
I am a big Joe Bros defender. This video is a cool concept, but I would say it's one of their more embarrassing songs. Like, and there's like no other version of this song. There's like little segments in between like verses where they're just like talking to each other, and it's so embarrassing.
Is it like fake scripted talking?
Yeah, it's like fake scripted talking, like they're hanging out with their friends, but it's like really embarrassing. Like, like trying to push themselves into a specific genre. Like at one point, one of them's like, "No way, Chuck Taylor's!" Like it's
like they're going for that the Weezer thing of the like, "You going to the party later, man? I'm so stoked!" Like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is one of those segments, and it's just like super embarrassing. And I get what they're trying to go for, because the song is about how they like met this new girl and they're so in love with her and just like
they collectively.
Yes, all of them are in love with the same woman. No,
is that really the part or no?
No, just like having a new crush and you never thought you'd like anybody again, and so it's just like hanging out with the guys and but like thinking of your new crush. It's just like a really embarrassing scenario, and I will only ever listen to this in the car by myself because it's just like such an embarrassing version of it, and I honestly don't think any other version of it exists. But it's so catchy, and there's like a pretty decent like guitar solo in it later on.
That talking thing always is so embarrassing and yeah. cringy to me. I think the worst one is Pink has a lot of stuff like that.
Ugh,
I feel like
yeah.
I think that would maybe be, just knowing you, I feel like if your headphones got pulled out, it would only be during the talking part that you'd be embarrassed to be yeah. listening to this. Otherwise, you'd be like, I just love the Jonas Brothers and I'm right? unashamed.
Yeah. But if it was one of the parts where they're like, oh, I dropped my pencil, I'd die. I would die.
Speaking of embarrassing, like... Imagine being the person that's like recording that talking part and mm. you're just in a silent booth and you're just like talking randomly like
yeah. hello all my friends.
Right.
Like yeah, that, we that can that add the feel... friends in later, right?
Yeah, because it definitely is like only the three of them and maybe like a sound tech that was in the booth with them just yeah. like pretending to hang out with them.
You know the sound tech just like, is it yeah. like lunchtime? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, let's get some of the interns in here. Just pretend you're friends with them for a few minutes.
The melody reminds me of that John Mayer song, the man-made fan blade one-man submarine ride or whatever it's called.
It's like waltz something. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean, melody-wise?
Yeah.
That guitar solo was out of nowhere. I was not expecting it to...
Definitely doesn't, like...
to pick up.
Yeah. Yes, it's humiliating.
There's the drop the pencil part.
All right. Yeah. Oh, this is me. So.
It's the random, it's worked
it's
out.
It's worked like, out, yeah.
You know, on a beach.
This is a song called I Am by the band Zebrahead from the album Playmate of the Year. So this pick for me is specifically the album. I got really into this album when it came out. Looking back on it, it's very embarrassing lyrically. It's just a straight up rap rock album, but I think at the time I like made peace with it because the rock was like pop punk style rock. So I was like, all right, it's fine if it's rap rock as long as it's pop punk rap rock. But it's very embarrassing. And I picked this song because I think it gets right into the rapping. But I think almost all of the songs I put on my list, I still like them and will go back to them, mostly because of nostalgia. But I'd be lying if I said that listening to this, I'm not like at least a little bit pumped up right now.
Yeah.
Did you ever get into this album, Ravi?
No. Funny story though. So my only real experience with these guys was. So I was in a band in like during the transition of like high school to college, like those couple years,
mm-hmm.
and Upper Hand, which I'm sure you remember. And we had this song that I remember like was one of our like fun songs, one of our like pump up songs, and I think we opened with it if I'm not mistaken. So I remember we were at this like
that song.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? That like is basically this song, or not this song.
Shorty, but, it was called, right?
Yeah. Yep. Good memory, man. I don't even think I remember that. So I remember we were like playing this show, and we were kind of like that band that was out of nowhere. Like it wasn't part of the local scene. I think it was like out in like Fitchburg or something, and we randomly got this show. So nobody like it was. It was one of those, like, you have to impress the crowd because they don't know who you are, they're not mm-hmm. friends with you kind of shows. So we like played our, we opened with that song and everybody's like pumped up and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Like, this feels really great. And then we end the song and one of the guys that was like right near the stage, I heard them go, wait, I can't, was that the Zebrahead cover? Or was that, and I'm like, what is he talking about? So then I went home and like searched Zebrahead songs. And I found, I think it's Playmate of the Year, actually.
Yeah, it's the title.
And the guitar riff was like verbatim.
Oh, no.
But nobody in our band liked Zebrahead, so nobody knew that we were like completely ripping off this guitar riff. It's one of the more embarrassing moments of my life.
The last thing I'll say about them is that it's just very embarrassing, like white dude rapping rap stuff, but the choruses are these big alt rock pop punk choruses.
Yeah.
So there's still something there that I can appreciate.
This is me.
All right. Yeah, defend this.
So this is Fall Out Boy, who in general is not a guilty pleasure of mine, but this album, Save Rock and Roll, is a guilty pleasure. Because it's a lot of it is kind of like arena rock-ish, like this one in particular.
And so true.
Like, you can hear this at a Bruins game.
Yeah, yeah.
But
so accurate.
But I love,
like, right, like during a power play.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yep. And it's like one of those, like, you see the louder meter and everyone in the arena is getting ready to like scream to hit the top of the allowed meter. But I have so much fun singing along to this album. I love singing along to Fall Out Boy in general, but and it just like puts me in a great mood and like pumps me up. And if I have like a long drive ahead of me, this is one of my go-to albums to like listen to. They have a history of having just generally embarrassing lyrics sometimes. This one's no exception. It's I'm gonna change you like a remix, then raise you like a phoenix, which isn't great. But
I think my issue with this album is that it feels very butt rock to me. It's just like the heaviness of it and like how like gruff he's like making his voice. Just it's not butt rock, but it's like very close to the butt crack. And I've told you before, I call this phase of theirs Fallout Butt.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't argue with you there.
So I think that's like, and I don't know what it's called, but I think that's like a subgenre of like pop punk or you know, because. And it's funny you mentioned like the arena rock thing, because I remember I was at a Bruins game once and I heard an Anne Berlin song.
Oh, really?
Which was like in that same classification of like,
absolutely,
you know, butt pop runk, right?
Yeah.
Like
pop runk?
Did I just say pop runk? Like, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Pop runk, right. So I totally know what you mean, you know, like it's totally its own thing.
Man, that is so true for Anne Berlin. Anytime they're in a minor key, you notice it and you're like, oh yeah, they're borderline butt rock.
And it's like eight guitar tracks, like, durr, you know, it's like
very like palm muted and like,
oh yeah,
heavy.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, shut up, theater kid.
Yeah, it's very crack adjacent for sure.
This guy just, the singer for Anne Berlin, he always gives me the impression that he just walked off stage playing Jean Valjean to make it to this show.
He's totally one of those guys that, like, you see a picture of him, and if you see a picture of him for the first time after listening to the music, you're like, that's not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
You know, like, for sure.
These guys are very theatrical, too,
in
their later stages.
Yeah.
Oh man, you got
for
that
sure.
dance beat, the classic.
Yep.
The
it's like pretty catchy, but
their drummer figured out the disco dance beat and he never went back.
No. Nope. But if I was gonna tell someone I was a Fall Out Boy fan and they'd be like, "Oh, do you love Save Rock and Roll?" though, I'd be like, "No, that album sucks." Like, I would never admit, except now it's on record that I love this album.
Yeah, I'm like genuinely afraid to put this episode out. We've only touched the surface of the embarrassment.
Oh yeah,
for me, it's almost like fate is easing us into it by giving us our least embarrassing choice. Oh man, so this song was it made me cringe to put this on my playlist because I specifically picked a song by this band and from this album that I know is bad. And I don't usually even listen to when I'm listening to this album. The band is Lit, and that they are, the whole band is my guilty pleasure in this case. But I was afraid if I put on, like, something people knew, like My Own Worst Enemy or Ziploc Bag, people would be like, I don't know that that's that much of a guilty pleasure, because those songs are legitimately great. And I think on that album, A Place in the Sun, there are some, like, legitimately great just 90s pop rock jams. This is from their album after that called Atomic, which I also got hugely into, and has just way more embarrassing shit on it. I still really like that album. I don't know about really like. I know it's bad as I'm listening to it, but like, there, I have some real nostalgia for that time that gets me through the worst of it. And then I'll skip one or two that I think are particularly embarrassing. Like this one, this verse right here is so embarrassing. Listen.
Ew.
Did you catch that?
I didn't catch the whole thing,
He said, basically the plot of the verse is that his girlfriend flew him out to Chicago to tell him that she's cheated on him on the Jerry Springer show.
Okay.
It's so stupid and corny, and it just makes me cringe so fucking hard. But there are other songs on this album that I do like a lot and will revisit. And we've been in bands for a long time, so you gotta know that guitar-wise, these guys, like, were a huge influence on me.
I remember you would, like, Lit was definitely brought up more than once.
They were the only band that I listened to back then that was, like, that incorporated elements of classic rock guitar playing into, like, the genre that we were playing
right
at the time. And so there was something, like, really appealing about that to me. But this song is, it's just bad. And there's not a lot of redeeming qualities to it. I like that guitar solo a decent amount. This bridge is, like, reasonably catchy, but it's just unforgivable from a lyrical perspective. So, yeah, Lit. Lit the band is my second guilty pleasure. Oh, this is also me. So this is a genre, and that is Christian rock. There are some Christian rock songs, again, because of nostalgia, having grown up like listening to it, that I will go back to and listen to unironically and enjoy them. And this is one example of it. This album is basically like...
Oh, this sounds so familiar. I can't put a finger on it.
Very funky.
This is a band called DC Talk.
That's right.
This is like their funk rock album that is... It's basically like Christian Red Hot Chili Peppers. I think that's kind of what they were going for. And
it kind of reminds me of the B-52s a little bit, yeah. Like that intro at least.
I legitimately love that guitar riff. It like...
That's Israeli my, Parliament
that's my,
Funkadelic.
My get shit done. That's a get shit done guitar riff for me. But then it's like some of the same problems as Zebrahead, where like the rap parts are real embarrassing.
Yeah, I remember.
Just the rap parts.
The rap parts, even at the time, were like kind of embarrassing by modern day rap standards. But then like by our rap standards today, I just feel like rappers have gotten so much better over time in terms of like their flows and being more creative with rhyme schemes and all that sort of stuff. So like this type of rap that was already not great by contemporary standards really doesn't hold up now. And the chorus, like the singing and all that, it's similarly cheesy to like a lot of Christian rock, but like the funk rock dynamic of it is what I think draws me back to it. So maybe like once a year I'll listen to like one or two DC Talk songs. Sometimes, like I said, it's a genre, so there are other Christian rock songs I'll go back to too. There's a band called Bleach that has a couple of songs that I love, like Super Good Feeling and Land of the Lost. But I'm not even religious anymore, so there's like a lot of religious content to the lyrics that makes me cringe now. but I just like love the choruses and the songcraft of some of these, and the nostalgia is what brings me back to it.
Let me stop you there for a sec. I don't think you need to be religious to feel cringeworthy on some of this stuff. Like,
well, yeah, but I feel like for me, just somebody mentioning like my relationship with Jesus Christ in a song is enough to make me be like, I'm taken out of this. Whereas like if you're religious and that's literally it, that's like as explicit as it gets, you might be like, oh, all right, yeah, right. I'm into that.
Yeah. This definitely has like I'm assuming this is like 93, 94, but can't be much.
That's a good question. Yeah, probably.
Because it's definitely got this the producers still are stuck in the 80s, but are trying to transition into this more modern world, like kind of feel to it.
Well,
you know?
I think we've talked on our Christian rock
a lot of
album.
Phasers and like weird, mm-hmm. like effects.
On our Christian rock episode, we talked about how Christian rock is basically like 10 years behind contemporary
sure,
music.
Yeah, right.
So that doesn't surprise me at all.
I feel like at least once a month you'll wake up and you'd be like, I have this DC Talk song stuck in my head, or like I have this Jars of Clay song stuck in my head.
Okay, I've never uttered the words, I have this Jars of Clay song stuck in my head.
Well, who are some of the other ones that you like still?
Probably them and DC Talk and Bleach are the only ones that I'll go back to and listen to. Reliant K too. I legitimately like a lot of Reliant K stuff in an unembarrassing way. Some of their older stuff is a little embarrassing.
Right.
Now.
I was just gonna say, like, their newer stuff is like actually legitimate in my eyes, at least. But certainly the older stuff has that like corny feel to it.
And Berlin, which falls into that category for me.
Were you ever a Newsboys guy?
No, I never was.
Yeah.
Oh, I was into a couple Christian bands I used to be into back in the day, like POD and Project 86. Like, I was just a huge rap rock guy. There's no way around that. but I don't ever revisit those bands now. That's embarrassing talking.
I'll always remember that drive back from Nate's wedding where we were like cranking DC Talk for some reason.
Our friend Dave McGee is like a big, I think, unironic DC Talk fan. So,
so this is me. This is the song I Heard Your Voice in a Dream from the musical. I can't remember the musical, but it's from the show Smash. And the in-show musical that I'm forgetting right now. And Brian Babineau is listening to this and is furious at me. But so show tunes in general, I'm not embarrassed about. I think they have enough cred at this point that it's not an embarrassing thing to like show tunes. But I think it's an embarrassing thing to like fake show tunes. This song, though, was written by Andrew McMahon, so I think it's a legitimate banger. I love this song so much, I sing it regularly in the shower. I just think it's like a really great, sweet song. And Jeremy Jordan is, I love, from a Broadway standpoint, I think his voice is great. But just the fact that it's a fake show tune that I am obsessed with. This show also had a musical about Marilyn Monroe called Bombshell, which also has some great songs on it.
Did you ever watch Smash, Ravi?
No, I didn't.
What was the name of this musical? Do you remember, Tim?
I just remember that it was supposed to be like Rent.
Yeah. And though, like, so Smash had musical numbers on it that were like staged like Broadway, and like the musical number for this one is really cool because the character who's singing the song is trying to get to the woman that the song's about, but she's on the other side of a stage, so there are people that are like dancers that are like in his way and they keep doing these different moves, but they're also like passing him along the stage as they're going, so visually it's really cool.
So is it a Is it only like the one song, or is it like a whole album? Like
it's a whole.
So yeah. It's basically like the show is a scripted show about people making musicals.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you'll see them do numbers as the shows are developing throughout the course of the show.
Gotcha. Okay.
Hit List is the name of this musical. Yeah. So like over the course of the show, you get musical numbers from those
this
musicals.
A Raffy Jam.
I'll get to this in a second, although the talking thing again, like, it's kind of cringeworthy. Real quick on the musical thing. Are you guys familiar with the band Ludo?
I've heard
of
them.
Only through you, I think. Yeah.
So they do this like album called Broken Bride, I think it's called. And it's like supposed to be a whole musical like thing. And I almost put it on my list for embarrassing things because it's like a pop punk band doing a musical album.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I honestly love it. And I don't think, like, you wouldn't really know it's a musical. Maybe parts of it unless you, like, looked it up. So I can't, like, say that it's embarrassing because to the whole, you know, your headphones come out of the jack thing. Like, if somebody heard it, they would just be like, oh, this is pop punk. But pretty cool, though. I love it.
That's a cool concept.
Yeah. So this is Mika. So Mika is he's a British singer. It's just not my, like, it's not my typical, like, type of music, so that's why I put it on the embarrassed list. It's actually one of my wife's favorite artists, rather.
She loves this group.
Right. And so I've just, like, I've started to like him because I've heard her listen to him and all this stuff, and to the point where I'm just, like, this guy's, like, really good at singing.
Yeah, his voice is incredible. I was like super into this album when it first came out.
Extremely influenced by Freddie Mercury.
Well, actually we just missed the line where he says, like, I'm gonna try a little bit of Freddie, and then he like impersonates him a little bit. So my dream, like, so he hasn't really done much, at least in the US, for a couple years now, but my dream was when Queen was talking about like reforming and doing shows and stuff, I was like, this guy would be freaking perfect. Like, even his stage mannerism, like, he was like Freddie Mercury part two, and I was like so hoping that he would be chosen, but didn't end up getting it, obviously. But in any case, it's just like all of his songs are very like playful, very like, you know, so it's kind of one of those things that, like, if my headphones came out of the jack, like, and this was playing,
especially
I'd be like
high, very high falsetto.
Right. Exactly. Right. So
did your child record this?
It's funny. We saw him out in, he played a show in Boston a while back, and I took my wife and a couple of her friends for her birthday. And we ended up like meeting him outside on his way back to his bus, and it was like one of those all these like girls running up to him and me. But anyway, so that's one of those, yeah, and more talking.
Not even talking, just him saying ka-ching.
Yeah.
This is also you, Raffy.
I'm trying to remember what. Oh, right. Okay. So while I was like selecting, and I have to stop just to let part play for a second. But while I was, let me just do it. So here's my thing, right? Like, as I was like trying to find what are the right songs to play during this podcast, I kept coming back to like pop music, right? But then I'm like thinking to myself, like, all right, I think you even said it a few minutes ago, like, at the end of the day, if somebody hears you listening to something like popular, it's like, all right, like, you're listening to it, it's like top 40, whatever it is, it's, you know, probably not your favorite song, but you're listening to it, right? It's not super embarrassing in of itself. But I added this because I sort of take it to a new level where I need to like justify to myself that like I don't like pop music because it's masked in pop punk or it's masked in like metal or whatever, right? Like, oh, this is okay because the guy's screaming at the top of his lungs, right? But
people are like, you listen to top 40 and you're like, no.
No, listen to this. This is punk, man.
Love the breakdown.
Yeah, and so I picked this one. I think there's better songs to play that get my point across because they're like they stay close to the pop music, but But this one I just find hilarious because it's like totally ripping and
so heavy.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys like listen to these albums. There's like six different versions of them. And what I found is like the first couple albums were a little bit more like actual pop punk or punk bands like doing it. But now, like, if you listen to the last couple, it's basically all this. It's just like metal bands doing pop music. And they're equally as fun because it's like, this is just so weird to hear this version. But certainly, like, this is like, again, going back to the headphones come out of the jack and somebody listens to you, somebody hears you listening to this, I think their first reaction would be like, oh, okay, the guy likes Matt. Wait a second. You know?
I think for me, metal is a little bit embarrassing because the best way I can describe it is if you're listening to like modern metal where it's the vocals are just like pure screaming, there's nothing in this world, almost nothing in this world that justifies that level of raising your voice. So if somebody like heard me listening to somebody being like, I'm just like, I can't justify why this guy is screaming at me.
And
right
that
now.
Consistently too, for sure.
Yeah.
And also the, but I was telling Kat this recently, cause I was like, yeah, I bet like originally metal was way less corny than it is now because you didn't have people like embarrassingly screaming. But I went back and like tried to give like Megadeth and Metallica and like Pantera and all these bands a chance, and you're like, ooh, the vocals were even worse when they sang.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It was even like more corny,
very
right?
theatrical and corny.
Yeah,
and
yep, like, exactly. That's the best way to put it. It's just like a total like theatrical performance.
I literally want
with
like
distorted guitars.
I want an app that just lets me listen to only the music of metal music. You know what I mean?
It's so
I
true.
Love this.
I do
show up, Cass Alley.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys heard the breakdown, but it's like it's hilarious what he's saying. I don't know the exact words, but he's like, "We're gonna burn this shit on fire." Like, he totally like takes it to the next level. It's great.
It's like the guy at the party where it's like getting out of control, and then he like starts breaking shit and lighting stuff on fire, and you're like, "Whoa."
I don't know what that was on.
Kat, you're up.
Oh, this is perfect.
Oh, nice. This, yeah, great segue, right?
So for anyone that doesn't know, this is Guns N' Roses. The song is Paradise City. from the album Appetite for Destruction. Generally, I'm not embarrassed about Guns N' Roses, but they're representative of hair metal, which I'm kind of embarrassed that I legitimately like. I just, because it's so, I have this huge theater kid inside of me. So I think that's why I'm so drawn to hair metal. And Axl Rose was like one of the most theatrical frontmen of all time. And now he's humiliating.
Which is like pretty par for the course with all bands in this time frame, this genre. Like all of them are trying to do reunions now, and it's like you look at the lead singer and you're like, ooh, you should not be up there.
I would argue though, even them in their heyday, looking at it now does not hold up. Like
no.
It looked corny and embarrassing.
Oh, sure. The music videos especially, you're like, this is
But I'm sure at the time everyone was like, I am so fucking wet right now.
I would imagine that would be the case.
That's like, I still say that.
No, absolutely not. But so I was obsessed with the Can't Hardly Wait soundtrack, and this song is featured prominently in that movie and on that soundtrack. So it like got me into like more curious about them in general. And then I was just like, hair metal rules.
I don't love hair metal in general, but I had a huge phase of it back probably in high school. And that, I think that influenced some of my guitar playing in our bands too. Just, you know,
bunch of squeals.
You know, I never heard a guitar note that I didn't wish was squealed. I never heard a guitar riff that I didn't wish was harmonized. Like I love that shit, but I think our last episode that we did was Coheed, which they have a lot of that hair metal influence
for
to
sure.
them too,
yep.
Which I like. But I, I was especially into Van Halen, who I think is maybe not technically fully in that genre. I think they were like a little early to be like part of that full that genre fully, but I think they're adjacent enough. And then REO Speedwagon, like the very pop end of the spectrum. Yeah. But man, I love some of those big cheesy REO Speedwagon bangers.
Yeah, but like, so Slash is a legitimately talented guitarist, and I think musically there's a lot of great stuff on this album. A lot of the songs are about heroin, which if you don't know the euphemisms, you're just like, this is a weird song about some guy named Mr. Brownstone. There's one song on this album called Rocket Queen, where Axl Rose is actually having sex with a woman in the recording studio, and they put that sound on the song, which is embarrassing also to listen to.
Because she's like, oh, yeah, this feels good.
I forget. It was somebody in the band's girlfriend, too, at the time. It wasn't even his girlfriend or, like, a random woman.
What?
Yeah.
Those types of stories.
You mean to tell me this band
those types
was
of stories,
not monogamous?
Those types of stories, like, make me think about, like, Spinal Tap and what it's trying, like... Let's just like keep the sex sounds on, like, you know, and being like a producer or a band manager, like, just like, come on, like, are we really gonna do this?
I don't know, like, man. I feel like in that age, like, everybody was so coked out of their mind, and like the managers and producers were like, fuck yeah, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's so badass.
Are we rolling tape on this fuck sesh right now?
Fuck sesh.
Welcome back to Fuck Sesh with Tim Raffi and Kat.
New podcast.
I think it's the end. Now he's just being egregious.
Yeah, the typical like faux endings.
Yeah,
like,
there's one song, Mr. Brownstone again, where at the end of it he is like.
So he does that like in every song. Like, I think he even did it earlier.
Welcome
in this.
To the jungle.
It's gonna bring you down.
Yeah, it's so corny. Have you heard the Running with the Devil where it's just the vocals isolated?
No.
It's so fucking funny. It's just David Lee Roth being like, ah!
Oh, man.
I was kind of annoyed at first when you put the song in your playlist because it's 6 minutes and 45 seconds. And I was like, we have to talk about Guns N' Roses for 6 minutes and 45 seconds. But like you said, Slash's guitar solos are dope.
Yep. If I'm drunk enough and this comes on at like a bar or a party, I will like serpentine the Axl Rose like wiggle.
Can confirm it. Be embarrassing.
Only for you to see it. It's fun for me to do it.
Kat doesn't drink a lot anymore, so now when she does, she gets absolutely like blackout shit face.
Yeah, it's bad.
And she does really embarrassing things, but I love it because like for years I was the guy in the relationship who got embarrassingly drunk, and now I get to like see what that's like from the other side.
It's almost like this should have been your song because of Kat.
She gets so drunk that she'll like fuck other dudes' girlfriends and record it.
Well, right. I mean,
yeah. My weekly fuck session.
Oh, more ending.
Yeah.
I think that's at least like, it's at least four or five right there.
There you go.
Drummer's got to have a blast.
I think this is my last one. So this is just a song that's a guilty pleasure for me. This is a song, Paper Cut by Linkin Park. I got hugely into Linkin Park when this album, Hybrid Theory, first came out. And every couple years, I'm like, I think I like that album enough as a guilty pleasure that I can go back and listen to it. And then I do that, and I'm like, nope, I only can get into the first song. But this, I think this song is, like, legitimately... I enjoy it. It's bad in the way that... rap rock music. Why is, I just realized just now that rap rock is like the overarching theme of my of my playlist.
It all comes back to rap rock.
But I think this one is one of the less embarrassing songs on the album because it doesn't have the main guy's like growling pig singing voice that he does on a lot of the songs. It's just the rapping, and I think the guitar riffs are like pretty interesting, and I feel like it captures what's compelling about rap rock to the extent that there's anything compelling about it, which is that it's got like some of the heaviness of metal and rock with the syncopation and the really intricate rhythms of electronic music and hip hop. It's got some cool layers to it. I like the synth over the distorted guitars. But I mean, again, at the end of the day, if you're asking me honestly, somebody pulls the headphones out of my stereo and this is blasting, I'm fucking embarrassed as shit.
I was obsessed.
Or either that or I'm like, well, obviously I'm listening to it ironically.
Yeah. I was obsessed with this album in high school. Like, 15-year-old angsty me was like, they get me.
I used to shit on them because I remember when they came out, they were so young.
Yeah.
And me and some of my friends would be like, it's so corny how like angry and angsty they are for how old they are. Like, they have not experienced any amount of life that warrants this level of angst. But then you read about, I forget his name.
Chester Bedingfield.
You read about his life. He was like addicted to crack at 14 years old and like was abused and stuff. He just had like such a fucked up life already by this part of his life. So anyway.
So it's funny you mentioned that. Again, one of the bands that I chose not to put on here, but kind of going to the whole like relating to bands thing. So I almost put Boy Sets Fire on here because of the fact that like the music itself isn't terrible. It's not terrible. It sometimes gets a little butt rocky, but their whole thing was like they were all super communist.
Oh.
Right. And like for some reason, like in high school, I was like, yeah, like this is my jam. Like without knowing anything about fucking communism, like, but to your point, it's like you think you relate to these bands and you're like, this has nothing to do with my life.
At 15,
living in Burlington.
Not nearly experienced.
Yeah, right.
They had experience.
So, so I put Tay Tay on here, and here's why. So first of all, like I don't really like her now.
Uh-huh.
Like the whole like last few years of her like moving more into like the pop role. Not that I don't like it, but it's just like any other pop band for me or pop artist for me. It's just like whatever, right? But I remember like during these years of her writing, I was like all about it for some reason. I liked the I don't know. I it was just pretty music. I liked it, and you know, whatever. I'm not ashamed about it, or I am actually. but here's why I put it on. Here's why I put it on. So this is another like story based artist for me. So when I started my new job, I started there about a year ago, and I remember one of my first like team meetings, like the way that they like to introduce like a new person to the team was they would ask them like a question in front of the whole team of you can answer either one. What's your favorite Taylor Swift song or your favorite Tom Hanks movie, right? And at the time, like it was like, oh, an innocent question, right? But now I know, like, it's like a trick question, right?
Yes.
They're like, they're gonna like harp on you if you choose Taylor Swift, and so, I answered both sides. I gave my favorite Tom Hanks movie, but I was also like, because I just wanted to be accepted at that point, right?
Yes.
So I'm like, but like Taylor Swift, like I love her, like I love her early stuff, and I'm like going off about like how much I like her like early like music, and everybody's like, oh God, like the reactions, the look on everybody's face, and I immediately realized, I was like, I should not have said that. I
walked into a trap.
Oh, yeah. No.
And I was like, now everybody knows me as like the person who likes Taylor Swift. So
it was like everybody likes Taylor Swift.
I mean, everybody likes some element of it, right? But yeah. I was so like, so emphatically like defending like this type of music, right? So anyway, so that's why I threw her on here.
This song is also about John Mayer.
Yeah, right.
And I like that there's some John Mayer influence, like
the guitars.
Yeah.
Yep.
She's clever.
She's
girl.
A genius. Yep. Belongs in the Music Hall of Fame. I'm joking.
What Tom Hanks movie did you pick?
I picked Saving Private Ryan. It's not necessarily like your. Well, I guess it could be like it's not your quintessential Tom Hanks movie by any means. But I've always loved that, and then Apollo 13. Like I think he's incredible in both, and I just love those movies in general.
It's kind of hard to go wrong.
With a Tom Hanks
movie?
Yeah,
there was that one a few years ago where it's just like named after his character, and I don't
Sully?
Remember.
Sully?
No.
Captain Phillips?
Nope. It was just like a dude.
Oh, was it the one where he like goes back to school?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I don't remember what that
and it
was
looked
called.
Like absolute garbage. But like for the most part, most Tom Hanks movies are probably at least serviceable.
I would have gone Big.
Big's great.
Yeah, Big's great.
I'm with you. Saving Private Ryan and Apollo 13 are like pretty hard to top. I like Castaway a lot too.
Castaway's good. I mean, like he's definitely like you're acting by yourself essentially. Like that must be so difficult.
Mm. And that movie's like enjoyable.
Yeah.
Considering that.
Yeah.
Ooh, or Toy Story.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. Right.
If you're just tuning in, this is our Tom Hanks podcast.
Hanks a bunch.
Next up, Fuck Sesh.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
We don't have to listen to the whole thing, by the way.
The second offender of putting a 6-minute, 45-second song on
really
the
Is it really that long?
It is
oh,
really
geez.
Long.
Just stop it now. We don't need to do this.
It's almost as long as their relationship was.
Ooh. If you want to hear the John Mayer rebuttal, it's Paper Doll, which is a great song.
It's a better song, arguably.
Yeah.
I don't think I've listened to... I can't, like, think of what that one is. So
well,
I'm
it's
definitely...
just a tighter pop song. It's not... It's a little bit more...
It's only 3 minutes and 23 seconds.
Yeah, and it's less like... It's definitely less emotional. And it does actually feel a little bit weird that given the brief relationship they reportedly had, that she would write a song this dramatic about
it. Right.
Yeah,
right.
But that...
Well, I mean, her whole platform has always been like, woe is me with my relationship.
Yeah.
Like,
I dated this guy for 2 weeks and now I'm devastated.
Yeah. Like, at a certain point, you're like, there's a common theme here. Like,
yeah. There's like one album where 3/4 of it is about Jake Gyllenhaal and they dated for like 3 weeks.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Jeez.
I would be so interested to know what like a random sampling of her exes would have to say about that relationship.
Yeah.
This is a really long song, man.
How much younger was she than him when they dated?
I think she's like 10 years younger than he is. She just turned 30. He's not 40 yet. Is he 40?
At least, I would say. He might have just turned 40. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe
with him,
10
it's
years.
Pretty savage to write a song that's like, "Don't you think I was too young for you to be fucking me?" Like, yikes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about the rest of the guys, right? But I think with him specifically, I'll probably side with her. Like, he's a douche in general.
Is that all of our songs?
That's all mine. Yeah,
that's all mine.
I got some honorable mentions, but we're not going to play
them.
Let's
do the honorable mentions.
So I talked about a couple of them already. So I'm big into, not big into, sorry. So like a couple of these other ones here are ones that it's like, again, I don't think it's necessarily embarrassing to like this. It's just kind of out of the ordinary. So Lisa Loeb, like that song, what the hell was it? The
You Stay?
Yeah, like that I will sing any day of the week. Like it, that's like definitely one that, again, headphones come out, like, okay, yeah, I'm listening to Lisa Loeb. What do you want from me, right? Like, but same with, and I put these two together, More Than Words by Extreme. That's okay. Another one where I will just like, you know, definitely a sing-along for me. BTS, like I secretly love them. The Korean boy band, the K-pop band. And then I put on Les Miserables, like another one that I'll just like blast in the car and like sing every song to.
I don't really have honorable mentions because it was hard for me to make this list to find like an album, a song, a band, and a genre that I legitimately am embarrassed to listen to. And everything else that I can think of, like Backstreet Boys or like Katy Perry or something like that, are all things that like I would just tell anybody, yeah, I love that song. So I think if I loved certain Backstreet Boys songs, like
anything other than Backstreet's Back.
Yeah. I Want It That Way, but that's like a little bit more of like a, I think I would be embarrassed if the headphones came out and I was just unironically listening to I Want It That Way.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, anything else I can think of is just like maybe other people would have secondhand embarrassment for me, but I wouldn't personally be embarrassed to be caught listening to it. I don't know about you, Kat. You have other honorable mentions?
I think the only other honorable mention that I was maybe thinking of is 5 Seconds of Summer. They have a couple songs on the radio now, like Youngblood is one of them, where it's just like really indulgent pop music. But when I think of my like younger cousin, like having that have been her favorite band, it makes me feel like I'm too old to like them or like their music. So, but that's really it. I'm not really embarrassed, honestly, of like too much of my things. And like even the stuff I put on here today, I'm only like a quarter embarrassed about it.
and again, it's like more the scenario than it is the song or the artist itself, right? Like it's like you don't want to be listening to it in certain settings, right? But overall, like whatever,
that's fine.
I can defend it if you give me a 60-minute podcast, like exactly. I can totally defend it.
Okay, so let's switch to our drinking game. Today's drinking game is Jeopardy style, so you're going to have three categories. This is going to be a little bit different than we've done this style of game in the past, where we just kind of run through the questions for each category. Now, each category is going to have a drink weight assigned to it. Okay. So when you tell me what category you want to go with, you got to tell me, I want that category for one drink, I want that category for two drinks, or I want that category for three drinks.
Okay.
Okay.
If you get the question right, your opponent has to drink that amount of drinks. If you get it wrong, you have to take that amount of questions wrong.
Okay.
For the first one.
So is this me versus Kat?
It's you versus Kat.
Okay.
Rafi, you won the coin toss before the show, so you get to pick first. Your categories today, and I'll put this out in front of you so you can all see, are Quilty Pleasures, Guilt by Association, and Catholic Guilt. So, Rafi, you've got control of the board. What category do you want?
How
many drinks?
I'll go Guilt by Association, two drinks.
All right. So, your two-drink question is, which Godfather trilogy actor offered to bail a mobster friend out of jail? Was it A, Robert Duvall, B, James Caan, or C, Marlon Brando?
I'll go C, Marlon Brando.
Incorrect. It is James Caan. So you got to take two drinks. And Kat, you have control of the board.
I'm going to go Quilty Pleasures for one drink, Tim.
Okay. Your one drink Quilty Pleasures question. The word quilt is derived from the Latin word colchita, which means A, mattress or cushion, B, heavy or thick, or C, heat or warmth?
B, thick?
Incorrect. Take one drink. It is actually mattress or cushion. Rafi, back to you.
just to get an even play here, I'll go Catholic guilt for one drink.
All right. Catholic guilt, your one drink question. The reign of Pope Rodrigo Borgia began in scandal because he allegedly A, bribed his way into the papacy, B, had his predecessor murdered, or C, both A and B.
I'll go B.
It's actually A. He bribed his way into the papacy. So take a drink. Kat, back to you.
Let's go guilt by association for a three, Tim.
All right. So your three drink guilt by association question. Which actress from the Austin Powers series was seen socializing with a captain of the Columbo crime family? Was it A, Beyoncé Knowles, B, Heather Graham, or C, Elizabeth Hurley?
C, Elizabeth Hurley.
That's correct.
Oh, man.
Raph, you take three drinks. That's the first correct answer, I think. Yeah, and you retain control of the board, Kat, so what's next?
Let's keep this train rolling and Catholic guilt for three.
Okay. Catholic guilt, your three-drink question. Pope John the 12th allegedly died of a stroke while A, having sex with another man's wife, B, smoking opium, or C, molesting an altar boy.
B, smoking opium.
It was actually having sex with another man's wife. So
all right.
Take three drinks, and then Rafi, you've got control of the board. There's not
what's much left.
You got the two and three drink questions for Quilty Pleasures. You've got the two drink question for Catholic guilt, and you've got the one drink question for guilt by association.
Okay, I'll go guilt by association. One.
Okay. Who met with mob hitman Anthony Fat Andy Ruggiano to prepare for a role in a comedy film? Was it A, Robert De Niro, B, Hugh Grant, or C, Liam Neeson?
Fat Andy.
I mean, any guesses is good. I'll go Robert De Niro.
You're correct.
Oh, nice. All right.
Can't take a drink, and Raf, you got control.
I'll go Catholic guilt.
All right. So Catholic guilt, your two drink question. Pope Sergius III is notorious for allegedly A, orchestrating the murder of his predecessor while in prison, B, fathering a bastard child who would eventually grow up to become Pope John the Ninth, or C, both A and B?
I'll go C.
Correct.
Nice.
Kat, take two drinks. And Raffy, I think you got two more questions on the board. You got Quilty Pleasures for two drinks or three drinks?
I'll go Quilty for two.
Quilty for two. Just, the earliest known example of a quilted piece was found in what modern day country? Was it A, Russia, B, Mongolia, or C, Kazakhstan?
I'll go Mongolia.
You're correct.
Nice.
You're on a roll. You want to just close it out with Quilty Pleasures for three drinks?
Let's do Quilty for three. Yeah.
Historians believe the practice of quilting may go back as far as A, 3400 BC, B, 8100 BC, or C, 150 AD.
Go 3400 BC.
That is correct. Nice. Kat, take your three drinks, and I think, Rafi, we got to give the win to you.
Yeah.
So good. You win your fifth copy of Drinking Buddies, the Drinking Man's Game. Guys, any last thoughts on guilty pleasures, on Pope's behaving badly?
I wish the prize was a quilt, I'll be honest.
It should have been.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Here is your Drinking Buddies quilt.
Put it on the store. No, I mean, not really, no.
Any other questions about quilts I can answer?
I feel like I know way too much about quilts now.
Yeah, same.
Kat, anything from you?
No.
You guys have anything to plug?
Not really, no, no.
You want to plug your show, Kat?
Yeah, I have Conquest, which is on the Wasted Minds Network with me and Jinmo. Talk about pop culture. And then I also have Encyclocomica over at Make Fun, which is about comic books.
And I will just promote a couple of shows that I'm on. You can see me doing stand-up comedy in Cambridge on Friday the 14th, so that is, of February, so that is Valentine's Day. The show is at 288 Norfolk Street in Cambridge. It's a great lineup, headlined by the hilarious Jesse Burlingame. So yeah, if you don't have Valentine's Day plans, come out and check out the show. I'm also doing another stand-up show on February the 20th at 8 p.m. at the Cedar Box Lounge in Worcester. That's 15 Hamilton Street, Worcester. Tickets are only $10. Another great lineup there. Some of my favorite comedians from Worcester are on that show. So come check that out if you're around. I think that's it. So I guess we'll close it out. And to everybody listening, here's to you.
Cheers.